folks answer roll call, they'll introduce themselves if they would this morning with a little more specificity, and maybe they could tell you what they focus on in their areas as commissioners in charge. So this is Carla.
Hi.
And Carla runs the city. She just has this title called council clerk, but it doesn't do her justice. How you doing, Carla?
I am good. Thank you.
Good. Can you please get us started?
Yes. Fish?
For the benefit of our distinguished guests, I'm Nick Fish. I'm in charge of housing and parks for the city of Portland, and I have two kids at home, one age 6 and one age 17. And we're glad you're here. Aye.
Saltzman.
Well, I am Dan Saltzman. I'm in charge of the Police Bureau, the Bureau of Environmental Services, and the Children's Levy. And I'm present today here.
Leonard.
My name is Randy Leonard. I'm in charge of the Water Bureau, the Bureau of Development Services, and the Portland Fire Bureau. Welcome.
So Randy's a firefighter. You like firefighters?
Yeah, everybody does.
Fritz.
I'm here. I'm Amanda Fritz. I used to be a nurse for 22 years. I worked at OHSU. And now I'm in charge of the Office of Neighborhood Involvement, the Office of Human Relations, which houses the Human Rights Commission and makes sure that people can have their rights in Portland and throughout the world, and also the 911 Center, the Bureau of Emergency Communications, the Office of Healthy Working Rivers, which looks after the Willamette and the Columbia Rivers, and the Office of Cable Communications and Franchise Management, which collects a lot of money that helps the city pay for a lot of the things that we do, and also takes care of the cable companies and the companies that use the public streets.
Adams.
So you know TV, right?
Yeah.
Okay, so Commissioner Fritz is in charge of TV.
Well, I'm in charge of Portland Community Media, so you can see this on Channel 30. They rerun the city council meetings. You can also see them on streaming internet that they help us with. So you can tell all your friends to watch Channel 30, and then they can participate in their government as well.
Here. Can we start with communications, item number 529.
Request of Terry Shanley, start making a reader today, to address council regarding childhood literacy, volunteerism, and civic engagement.
Hi, Mr. Shanley, welcome to City Council. We're glad you're here. You only have to give us your first and last name, and you'll have 3 minutes. The clock in front of you will help you count it down.
Terrific. Thank you very much. Terry Shanley. I'm the CEO of Smart Start Making a Reader Today. Good morning, Mayor Adams, Commissioner Fish, Commissioner Saltzman, Commissioner Leonard, Commissioner Fritz, thank you very much for the opportunity to address the honorable body here this morning. SMART has a vision of an Oregon where every child can read is empowered to succeed. And each year we mobilize thousands of volunteers across the state to help children from kindergarten through third grade practice reading. And then we also provide books to them to take home so they can continue their literacy experience outside of the classroom. Studies show that low-resource families don't have books in the home. So those children that are at a distinct disadvantage. The research that's been done demonstrates that the work that SMART has done and continues to do, 60% of those children going through the SMART program are more likely by fifth grade, 2 years out of the program, to meet literacy benchmarks than those that have not. So we're making a serious impact. As you all know, this week is National Volunteer Week. And since SMART mobilizes upwards of almost 9,000 volunteers across the state, 2,000 plus of which are right here in Portland, to partner with those children to help practice reading, we are hosting first ever Read Out Loud Volunteer Recruitment and Childhood Literacy Awareness event this Saturday from 11 o'clock to 4 o'clock at Pioneer Place Mall. We're going to have local celebrities reading to children throughout the course of the day. Some of those notable readers include the former mayor Vera Katz. She's going to be joining us along with Sheila Hamilton with Kink Radio. CC Barber, Miss Oregon of 2009, will be there. Kevin Carroll, the author of Rules of the Red Rubber Ball. And Mary McDonald, the voice of OnStar, is going to be there.
Really?
I'm curious to see what she looks like. So, what I'm here to do is ask you to join us this Saturday. From 11 o'clock to 4 o'clock And I urge the leadership of the city and the other volunteers around the city to get involved. Reading to a child and helping support literacy takes 1 hour a week for 7 months during the course of the school year, only 1 hour, and you can change the path of a child's life. If they can read, they'll be more confident learners, and that's going to translate into a more balanced life. So I would urge you to participate, at least show up. And we've still got a couple of spots for readers if you'd like to volunteer. It's only 10 minutes. So thank you very, very much.
Terry, I just want to acknowledge your good work and tell you that one of your partners in this work, another nonprofit that recycles books for kids and puts them in schools, has approached the Parks Bureau and asked us to put stations at each of our rec centers where people can drop off books and that they'll be, in turn, used in the school. So we're in the process of setting that up. And
that's terrific. We've got to get the books in their hands.
Yeah.
Thank you very much.
Mr. Shanley, if somebody's watching this on Portland Community Media Channel 30, how do they volunteer?
They log on to the website, www.getsmartoregon.org, and fill out an application. You have a background check that you've got to pass. We're going to make sure that everybody's safe in those schools. And then volunteer at a school close to you.
Great. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much.
Thank you for your work. Really appreciate it. Carly, can you please read the title for Council Communications, item number 530?
Request of Richard L. Meyer to address Council regarding Housing Authority of Portland, the Portland City Council, and Oregon Public Records Law.
Welcome back, Mr. L. Meyer.
My name is Richard L. Meyer. As a candidate for the North Portland House seat, I have proposed that $30,000 be set as a maximum income allowed for a one-person household to enter and remain in the public housing sector as a client in Oregon. When I asked the Housing Authority of Washington County to provide me with statistical data, it provided me with files within 48 hours without fuss and fee. When I asked the Housing Authority of Portland four times for the same statistical data, it ignored my requests for 100 days. The Multnomah County District Attorney assured HAP that as long as it didn't respond to my requests, that he was not required to get involved. He also wrote to me that, quote, the records you seek do not exist, unquote, because they were stored electronically on a computer database program. DA Mike Schrunk's ignorance on this subject is frightening. Almost immediately after the DA's pronouncement that HAP's public records didn't exist, HAP embarrassed Schrunk by announcing that the public records I requested, like the ones from Washington County, did in fact exist, and that I could have those electronic reports and that take only seconds to produce for a fee of $125. Yardi Voyager is the browser-accessible database software used by HAP. Yardi Tech Support told me that the program can be configured to show as many or as few fields on screen as the program owner chooses. Its screen layouts and report capabilities are extensive, easy to use, and fast. It has sophisticated security that can restrict access by screen or user or class of users. And Yardi Voyager can be accessed on the Internet. I urge the only government body that confirms HAP's board and the mayor of Portland, the only elected official with the statutory authority to nominate and dismiss HAP's board, to accept your inherent commensurate responsibilities of oversight and accountability over those unelected, unvetted citizens who you have given the power to make public policy affecting the lives of 700,000 citizens in Multnomah County and annually spending more than $80 million of taxpayers' money. I particularly request Commissioner Fritz, who owes her job and allegiance to the taxpayers of Portland, to start acting like she respects those that helped put her in office, and demand accountability in the name of Portland taxpayers from the Housing Authority of Portland. Attorney General Kroger is to be commended for his efforts to put as many public documents under his control online to avoid the time-consuming and practically useless Oregon Public Records Law. The HAP Board can put its public housing statistical data online. The Portland City Council must make sure that they do. Thank you.
Mr. Elmire, I appreciate your testimony. Carla, can you please read the title for Council Communications, item number 531?
Request of Alex Ansari to address Council regarding increased military, naval, and homeland security presence in the city.
Good morning. Welcome to the City Council chambers.
My name is Alex Ansary. Good morning, Mayor Adams and members of the council. I'm here today to share my concerns for the safety and security of Portland in light of the direction that our nation is going at this time. In a YouTube.com video posted in January 2009, Mayor Adams said, and I quote, "I know I made big mistakes and I ask you for your forgiveness. I pledge to you, I will work harder than I have ever worked before to make sure Portland meets its challenges." And I'm glad to hear you say that, because that's why I'm here. I'm here to discuss some of those challenges that I feel that our city is going to be facing in the future, such as the federal takeover of our beloved city when a certain type of national disaster or state of emergency is declared by the executive branch of the U.S. government. Time does not allow me to document already what has been proved to be facts, such as numerous reports of hundreds of thousands of U.S. troops incrementally being redeployed to operate under the command of NORTHCOM in the event of civil unrest. What time does allow is the point to be made that although your predecessor, Tom Potter, is no longer the mayor, the clandestine plans for continuity of government in Portland remain firmly intact. Top Off 4 stands for Top Officials 4. This was the huge federally funded anti-terror drill that took place in our city between October 15th and the 19th, 2007. On the surface, official story, this was a simulated joint response to a terrorist dirty bomb attack, capitalizing on the fear generated by the events of 9/11, the same day that our government is used to justify the deaths of well over 1.4 million innocent people in Iraq and Afghanistan. In reality, it was another example of a taxpayer-funded exercise in the millions, where multiple alphabet soup agencies of the U.S. government, including the CIA and DOD and FBI, practiced directing the City of Portland's emergency response. At a press conference at PIR, Governor of Oregon, Ted Kulongoski jokingly said in a statement posted on Willamette Week's YouTube channel that this has been a great exercise for me. I'm actually going to fall into a trap and something serious is going to happen to me, and I'll have to trigger the succession clause of the Constitution, who becomes the governor in a time of emergency. I've been told the only thing I have to worry about is when they start putting the rubber gloves on. That's a quote from our governor. Moving forward to late 2008, Oregon Representative Peter DeFazio voiced his concerns about the real plans for continuity of government before the House floor in Congress. DeFazio protested the fact that as a member of the Homeland Security Committee, he was not allowed to see the plans, raising concerns that perhaps this was because of what truly lies in those plans, something that the public would find alarming. Portland, Oregon also had black helicopters swarming on Monday, August 25th, 2008, which alarmed people that didn't know what was going on. And the former mayor authorized live fire and live rope insertion and other things. In conclusion, I ask the city council to stand with the people, not the federal government, because you may very well be the city council when this hits the fan. And so I ask you to stand with the Bill of Rights and Constitution and be very, very careful about what money you take from the federal government, because that money comes with strings attached. Thank you.
Thank you for your testimony, sir. Carla, can you please read council communications item number 532?
Request of Doug Youngman to address council regarding the economy.
Good morning, Mr. Youngman.
Good morning.
How are you?
Good, thanks. I'm Doug Youngman. Good morning, Mayor Sam Adams and council members. I come before you this morning to remind you and all elected and appointed officials of your accountability to the limits of the Constitution and other founding documents of our great republic. Our fragile dollar is nearly worthless. We are teetering on bankruptcy and collapse. Yet constitutionally bound elected officials continue to allocate and spend taxpayer money they don't have, pushing the debt onto future generations. By printing money out of thin air creates more debt and waters down the value of the currency. Keynesian trickle-down economics creating jobs through work programs is unsustainable. We have a worthless currency and your spending is hyperinflating it, and thus enhancing economic deterioration and our eventual fall. We the people are the jury that is under fire for knowing right from wrong, and it is our job to bring forth accountability to you. Government officials need to take their medicine, and people listening at home must also take these words and do their part. This morning, I'm here to tell you of a non-political and non-partisan alliance of We the People who gathered in Illinois' November 2009 for a Continental Convention. Up to three citizen delegates from 48 of the 50 states met for 11 days to put together the Articles of Freedom for the free people of the United States of America by claiming and exercising their natural, unalienable right to do so, all as guaranteed by the Accountability Clause of the First Amendment. This is a civic action by a proactive, nonviolent mass movement having nothing to do with politics or the electoral process. The Articles of Freedom identifies multiple constitutional violations in its 15 articles, violations that have challenged the Constitutional Republic of the United States and her people at its core. Above all, we have government officials who have refused to honor their fundamental obligation to respond to the people's First Amendment petitions to redress these violations. And on Monday, April 19th, State of Oregon elected and appointed officials, including Governor Kulongoski and Attorney General John Kroger, were served. It is well settled in American jurisprudence that if anyone has an obligation to respond and he fails to do so, his silence amounts to admission. It is also well settled that any right that is not enforceable is not a right. That is, with every right, there is a remedy. However, the Constitution cannot defend itself. It is the duty of the people to defend it. I am here to defend our federal and state constitutions and to ensure the day comes when the American people will have institutionalized citizen vigilance for the purpose of routinely holding their elected officials accountable to their constitutions, regardless of their political stripes and whether they voted for them. And at this time, I am here to present each of you with the Articles of Freedom and its various remedial instructions. As a reminder to you and your appointed minions that you must uphold and obey the Constitution or you must leave.
Thank you, Mr. Youngman. Appreciate your testimony. Carla, can you please read the title for Council Communications, item number 533.
Request of Elisa Aguilera, Community Alliance of Tenants, to address council regarding the impact of substandard housing and the need to prioritize safe and affordable housing.
Good morning, Ms. Aguilera. Welcome back.
Good morning. I've provided you all with a copy of my testimony. So my name is Elisa Aguilera. I live in the Montevilla neighborhood in Northeast Portland. I'm one of the co-directors of the Community Alliance of Tenants. I'm here to provide testimony on behalf of the Community Alliance of Tenants. I'm here today mostly to say thank you to council for all of your leadership and support in all of your past support with safe and affordable housing issues. All of you at one point have been a champion and have really supported the issue to make sure that people in Portland have a safe place to call home and that we are continuing to provide more and more affordable housing to our community. CAT represents about close to 2,000 members in Portland alone of tenants, the majority of them are low-income tenants, who continue to urge you to support this ongoing. And it's a tough issue just with everything competing right now, but we really urge you, as this is essential in order for people to have a starting place to succeed in life. One of the main pieces that we do at CAT is go out to buildings that are in substandard housing conditions from calls that come into our renters' rights hotline. A building that we went to out this last year was a property where a number of very, very low-income families were living. They were having a hard time getting repairs made, broken windows. There was a lot of lead-based paint in the property, but the families couldn't tell. We were able to connect the families with Josiah Hill Clinic's blood lead testing as the first grounds in order to really open their eyes around the possibility of lead paint. Some of the kids tested high, only 1 point below where the county would step in to start assessing and really evaluating. At that point, the kid is susceptible to potential nerve damage and brain damage. We were able to use the inspections program and the results from the blood lead testing to get the entire building renovated and safe for so many families. There were a lot of children there that were three and under that were chewing kind of on windowsills where there was lead-based paint, and we were able to rehab it using the inspections program and using the information from the blood lead testing. We're able to do that, and usually a about 6 to 10 buildings per year here in Portland. The majority of landlords are diligent, but there are still some that are being neglectful of their responsibilities. So we'd like to thank Council for your past support. We still urge you to continue to support the issue as it is still a priority for so many folks who do not have enough affordable housing and who are still living in some of these substandard housing conditions. The need is growing far greater than what we are able to provide. And with the support of Council, we've been able to help people get into housing, provide that assistance gap. And I know I'm over my time, but I just want to do one last thing. We're having a rally tomorrow afternoon at 5:15 in front of Council, kind of bringing some folks to really thank Council, celebrate our past accomplishments, and continue to show our support around the issue during this recession as we're feeling it as well.
Mayor, can I just acknowledge that the Community Alliance of Tenants is a nonprofit partner of the city? And since Elise is here, congratulations to CAT for winning the National Low-Income Housing Coalition State and Local Organizing Award. That's a national award which they won this past year. So congratulations.
Yeah, thank you.
Congratulations.
Yeah, thanks. We're small potatoes with an award. But a lot of the work that we did is stuff that was in support and partnership with Council. So thank you.
Thanks.
Thanks very much.
Appreciate it. All right. That gets us to the consent agenda. Does anyone wish to pull any item from the consent agenda? Carla, would you please call the vote on the consent agenda?
Fish?
Aye.
Saltzman?
Aye.
Leonard?
Aye.
Fritz?
Aye.
Adams?
Aye. Consent agenda is approved. We have three time certains. Can you please read the title for the 9:30 time certain 534?
Establish a wellness strategic plan with the vision of creating an organizational culture that supports wellness and provides city employees the opportunity to share in the responsibility to minimize preventable health risk factors by improving and maintaining their health and wellness.
Commissioner Amanda Fritz.
Thank you, Mayor and Commissioners. The wellness program was created in 2005 to decrease health care costs for physical and mental illness and disease through promoting and supporting healthy lifestyle choices by employees and their dependents. So it's a program that was established to both help employees take care of themselves and their families, and also to keep our self-funded health care costs down. As a part of this program, the Citywide Wellness Committee was formed 2 years later, comprised of a group of dedicated city employees who value health and wellness and dedicate their time at least once a month to further the city's wellness goals. They have been tasked with finding innovative and cost-effective ways to improve the health and wellness of employees and their dependents. The committee, along with the Bureau of Human Resources and union representatives and my office, have all worked together in a collaborative effort to create a wellness strategic plan that incorporates organizational participation and health benchmark goals. The key to sustaining health behavior improvements amongst employees is a culture of wellness within the city that is supported by City Council, Bureau directors, union leaders, management, and employees. With that in mind, the Citywide Wellness Committee created this strategic plan to address five key health issues, or the health benchmarks, which are obesity, cancer, cardiovascular disease and hypertension, musculoskeletal and structural health, and stress and depression. By the city taking a more sustainable and holistic approach to health and wellness using preventative measures, it will help the city decrease our overall health care costs and increase employees and their dependents' health. I'm happy to introduce Kathy Bless, the Benefits and Wellness Manager for the city, Yvonne Deckert, the Director of the Bureau of Human Resources, and Nicole Guilfoy to continue this presentation.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Go ahead. No, why don't you go ahead?
Well, good morning, Mayor and Commissioners. I'm Kathy Bless, Benefits and Wellness Manager for the city, and I'm here today to talk about wellness and the strategic plan that is before you today. Today, we seek the approval of the strategic plan, your commitment to model healthy behaviors, your commitment to work with bureau directors to model and encourage those healthy behaviors, your commitment to ensure that the wellness strategic plan is implemented within your bureau portfolio, and your commitment to participate actively in a challenge with fellow council members. The challenge will be discussed in a little bit. We've tried wellness a few times, and we've learned some important lessons. We've learned that we need to gain active organizational support at the highest levels, be more effective in our communications, increase participation, not only in program activities that are available, but also in the benefits provided under the plan. We need to provide more depth and accessibility to worksite program components, increase preventive compliance, case management, and chronic disease management programs. What we have also gained is momentum and knowledge.
Just interrupt for a second. What was just handed out was from the previous citizen communications.
Okay, we just realized. Yeah.
Pay attention here.
What we have gained also is momentum and knowledge to move forward in a more comprehensive and specific manner. We have a lot of work to do. 70% of employees who participated in the worksite blood screening have a body mass index of over 26. And 70% are pre-hypertensive or hypertensive. 25% compliance in free wellness exams equals $745,000 a year in claims expense. And while this may sound significant, out of the $31.7 million paid for CityCorps claims last year, it only represents 2% of the cost. 45% compliance in mammography equals $398,000 a year in claims cost. And unfortunately, we paid nearly $1 million in claims for breast cancer the last plan year. Current disease management and case management programs are not effective, and we are working with ODS aligning chronic condition management with city goals. We must have a vested interest in ensuring we keep folks within manageable risk factors to begin the process of swinging these statistics and moving in a different direction. Your support and efforts to change city culture to a culture of wellness is crucial. Also crucial is setting up communications and plan design benefits that support the families and retirees under the health plan, not just the employees. This slide provides historical claims information. The city has been very fortunate in recent history, having very modest increases in the year-over-year claims expenditure. As you can see, we are experiencing a year that is not consistent with the recent past and may not be a predictor of future costs because of some of the dynamics afoot this plan year. ODS has provided aggregate claims data so we can begin to understand what has happened this year. The claims data suggests we have increased health challenges over previous years related to cancer, knee and hip replacements, back surgery, and some significant coronary disease. Most of the cancer volume is related to treatment with radiation, chemotherapy, surgery. We also have unusual cancers cropping up within the city population. Improving the health of employees and their dependents is a more sustainable way to control long-term health care costs, as well as better for our employees and their families. And what I know for sure is that no matter what changes we make administratively or through health care reform, if we do not become a healthier population and reduce risk factors, real cost control will continue to be out of our reach. The resolution before you establishes a strategic direction for through 2013. It builds on successful program components, promotes self-responsibility for health behaviors through plan design and participant involvement, and continually communicates strategic goals, initiatives, progress, and the payoff to you and to all employees. The vision of the new strategic plan is the City of Portland has an organizational culture that supports wellness, and every City of Portland employee owns responsibility to minimize preventable health risk factors by improving and maintaining their health and wellness. The mission is to provide support and resources to motivate employees in taking personal responsibility to minimize preventable health risk factors. As Commissioner Fritz said earlier, the primary objectives of the strategic direction is to create an organizational culture that recognizes and supports wellness, increase employee participation, and establish health benchmarks to measure outcomes, support behavioral changes, and minimize those risk factors. In creating an organizational culture that recognizes and supports wellness, the public commitment to wellness by council is essential for its success. Work to establish wellness goals within bureaus and or bureau work groups by providing tools and training to directors, managers, supervisors to identify, model, and encourage healthy behaviors. We need a regular cadence of marketing. We need to work to understand and overcome current barriers by bureau. We need to do some assessments of bureau culture, develop focus groups within those bureaus, and work with managers and supervisors on creating this culture and how best to promote and market the programs available. We need to develop accountability and a sense of community in how we support each other. In increasing employee participation, we will implement tools to measure that participation. We will improve those communications with wellness portals and other tools, regular on-site health education, and an annual survey. Focus groups will be very important in crafting messages that work with different work areas. The health benchmarks are important, and within the strategic plan are initiatives to review and change access to health care, preventive screening, and other benefits directly related to improving health. Based upon some recent national statistics, individual lifestyle choices, including those related to nutrition, weight, exercise, stress, and smoking, account for 40% of an individual's health status and 88% of his or her health claims costs. Live, telephone, and online individual coaching and chat opportunities that support each of the health benchmarks will be in place soon, assisting employees in setting these personal health goals. To report our progress, additional reporting and measurement tools will be in place. Realistic expectations of implementing this strategic plan today will offer us in the short term a culture change, supportive environment, communication and benefit plan design support. In the medium term, I think we'll see progress with regard to the health benchmarks by decreasing the obesity rate, tobacco cessation, improve preventive screening compliance. In the long term, to lower health care costs and improve health. What you can do today is support this plan, model healthy behaviors, develop a personal wellness goal, participate in the programs and benefits, support an individual's commitment to change at an organizational level, set expectations for bureau managers and encourage your bureaus, support requests for resources, and adopt the resolution today supporting the Wellness Strategic Plan. All employees will receive a communication regarding the wellness program and benefits available, the strategic plan, and information about their responsibility. Wellness program benefits will be listed in the employee handbook sent out during annual enrollment. Benefit programs will also be listed within the wellness webpage with other resources and steps to begin making individual change. We need to create and prioritize a to-do list based upon the strategic plan and prioritize what steps are necessary to break barriers to wellness support and also to gain commitment for your participation in the council challenge. To show your enthusiasm and commitment to the strategic plan and wellness, I would like to challenge you. I'd like you to choose a community activity with a wellness component by May 1st. Nicole's handing out some information on programs here, but then also the events that we have began for you. I'd like for you to invite employees and their families to participate as well. The challenge will run from May 1st through October 31st, And any employee and family members that participate in all five activities, each one that you have selected, will be invited back to council for recognition of their participation. There's some very interesting events on there. Questions? Yeah?
Well, I'm confused. What exactly is the challenge?
Well, let me elucidate, because it's really my challenge to my colleagues here. This is a list of suggested activities, but for example, the top one that's listed is the NAMI Walk, the National Alliance for Mental Illness Walk. So I have registered for that, and I have a team, and I'm encouraging all city employees and their dependents to participate in that activity. It's actually a good one to start off with if you're not used to doing a lot of strenuous activity. It doesn't start till 1 o'clock in the afternoon on a Sunday, which I think is a very civilized hour. It's a gentle stroll around the Esplanade and Waterfront Park, so it's not hood to coast. Pretty much most people can participate in at least part of that walk. And so then those who come to the walk and participate as a city employee on their own time, of course, would get a sign-off from another employee or from me to say that they were there. And then the next activity, one of you would pick something between May and October, that you're going to do an activity that has a wellness component. It has to have some measure of physical exercise in it. Mm-hmm. And you publicize it and try to get all the employees and the dependents to come to that one. And then anybody who participates in all five will get recognized by council at the end of the year.
Choose one of these events.
One of these or something similar. So these are just examples. There'll be five of these that will be selected, each one.
Be a point person to encourage other city employees to participate in that event.
You will be the point person for the activity that you choose. Mm-hmm. This has to be a top-down thing that we are modeling good behavior. So you pick something that you personally are going to participate in, and then that you personally are going to be sending out a citywide email and encouraging all staff and their dependents to participate in it.
I'll take bridge pedal.
He's already got dibs on bridge pedal. All right. Well, so first come, first served here. Like I said, I have the number.
And if you have a different idea of a walk or something, I mean, it doesn't have to be from this list.
Yeah. Well, I just want to acknowledge that most of the events on this list seem to be low-impact walks. And for triathletes like Commissioner Leonard and me, we were actually hoping for something a little more competitive, but we're happy to...
Maybe that would be next year's challenge, Commissioner.
I look forward to seeing you swim the river
during the triathlon. In Bend, I think, in June, that we can sign you guys up for.
We have Ironman.
For the peak athletes on council, we might want something that's a little more – that's a little. I do have a question since you put up the question mark.
Yeah.
We have a marathon in September, don't we?
Just before you get to the question on that point, the essence is to do something and to pick a personal goal. And it could be that an employee might want to pick a personal goal of running the Portland Marathon in the fall or one of the more intense events. But it can be, for each employee, it can be something as simple as taking one flight of steps a day instead of taking the elevator, or getting out and eating a healthy lunch, or taking a walk at lunchtime rather than sitting at their desk. So yes, it's good to have those lofty and magnificent goals, but I also want the council and all employees to pick some that are measurable, achievable, and not as challenging.
So I have a question, if I could. Thank you for an excellent PowerPoint presentation. So throughout the report, there's references to enhancing employee participation, mm-hmm. reducing barriers, promoting exercise, engaging in sports teams and the like. So I guess the question I would have is, to what extent are we currently successful in either incentivizing our employees to use our existing facilities, like our rec centers, which are places people can work out and in fact, engage in the very activity you're encouraging us to do? To what extent do our current policies create incentives that drive people to our facilities?
Everybody looks at me. Okay. one of the things that we've done is we've put rec centers, fitness centers in most of our buildings, like the 1900 building and the Portland building. But when we talk about our parks facilities, certainly those facilities have been available to Parks employees, and we are looking at, and we've been having conversations with Parks about what the impact would be and whether or not there's something that we can do that doesn't put us in the position of an ethics violation by providing a service or a benefit to city employees that may not be open to the general public. And so we're looking at those things, Commissioner, and we're trying to work through them and figure out what the best approach should be. And so we're working on that aspect.
But we'd be very, very interested in having that conversation with Commissioner Fritz and your team. I mean, we currently provide lots of benefits to people that we don't offer the general public by virtue of the fact they're part of our wellness plan or a health plan. And if there are barriers that you identify, like cost barriers or other barriers to people participating in our rec centers, obviously we have an interest in having more people use our facilities and at the front end, you know, pay whatever rate. And obviously from this report, our employees could benefit as well. So we'd be interested in that conversation.
Okay.
Other conversation from council? Do you have more to present?
I do have some folks from the Citywide Wellness Committee and then Sukhil also to offer some additional comments about some of the challenges that they face within their bureau.
Thank you.
Okay. Thank you all very much.
It will be Eric Fullen, Carol Stahlke, and Sukhil.
Please come forward. Welcome to City Council.
Thank you. I don't know why I should lead off necessarily, but I'm Sukhil, Director of Transportation, and we have talked about wellness. I also am a member of the Labor Management Benefits Committee, and so I see some of the disease, the special disease groups where we're working on preventative practices in, for instance, diabetes, where we've identified that group of people that have a problem with diabetes and are giving them additional education, coaching, counseling, and some financial incentives to manage their diabetes in a better way. But part of that discussion extends over to the wellness area in terms of getting people to make good choices. And as I sat through this presentation, the most significant factor is getting people to make individual commitments. There's not any real mystery in that. And as we look at, I mean, I look at our maintenance folks, for instance, people that are in big equipment to a large extent. They are aging. We have a lot of overweight people. And those are exactly the kind of people that you'd like to get interested in doing something else, but they have a lifestyle that doesn't include that regular fitness and even good solid knowledge on some of the prevention aspects. So we have done a greater level of education, and as I'm sitting here thinking about this, we can do even better relative to letting people know what's already free in the benefits package. And we have instituted some fitness programs that are a combination of after hours or before hours or in conjunction with the lunch hour kinds of things out at maintenance. And we do a number of things downtown through the options group and whatnot. But the real barrier is getting people to make that initial step. When we hear from ODS or Kaiser or our benefits consultants, it is about the first step. So the barrier probably is recognizing that there's a big enough benefit that you're willing to make that change. And secondly, time. I mean, I look at myself. I do run a fairly heavy schedule, and it's not the highest priority to go and get over there in that exercise room or to go for an aggressive walk kind of thing. So I think it is that making that first step and understanding the benefits to you, because I always remember back to when I was negotiating healthcare benefits for the symphony, and one of the musicians said, you know, the best way to save money is to keep people healthy. And I mean, that's absolutely the case here. I mean, that's where the intersection of wellness and healthcare costs comes together. So It's both on a personal level and at a system-wide level.
Good morning, Council and Mayor. It's a pleasure to be here this morning, especially to support such a valuable program. The Water Bureau has actively participated in the development of this initiative and has actually implemented some of the programs. We've found that it has really enhanced our already established safety program, and we find that they go hand in hand quite nicely. Combined with the physically demanding work and our aging workforce, we find that the health and wellness impacts our workers' comp considerably. We find that sprains and strain type injuries, if they don't show up in the workers' comp system, they show up in our benefit system, both of which are very expensive. So we've actively endorsed this program and helped develop it. We've established a health and wellness committee that's a subset of our established safety committees. And they've been very active. The first thing we did is bring the health and wellness folks into the Bureau. And the first thing that we found is a lot of our employees don't even have primary care doctors. So that when they do get sick, they go to the emergency room, which is some of the most expensive health care that we can get. So we started a fundamental monthly wellness talks, just starting off with the basics. This is your wellness program. These are the benefits that you're entitled to as an employee, and we encourage that you use them. You know, some of the preventative medicines, for example. We have since rolled out stretching programs. We've got some train-to-trainer sessions with our interstate facility to promote the health and wellness. Sprains and strains just plague us on the workers' comp side. So we've increased some of the equipment in our fitness room at Interstate. And if you were to go in there at 6 o'clock before start of shift, the room is packed. As well as after shift, we have some of our off staff go down there at breaks and lunch and take advantage of the machines. The feedback has been tremendous. Nicole's been very supportive in the Bureau, coming out and doing the health and wellness talks every month. And those have expanded into nutrition, smoking cessation programs, and the like. We also promote EAP, our Employee Assistance Program, at every opportunity because of some of the stress and depressions that we see in the workforce. So I'm just here to encourage you to support that. I think it's a tremendous investment in all of our employees and will have long-term benefits for our workforce. So I appreciate your time.
Thank you. Hi, I'm Carol Stahlke, AFSCME Local 189, also an employee of the Water Bureau. I have been working on the Wellness Committee for the last couple of years. We have representatives from a majority of the bureaus on the committee. I would like to thank Commissioner Fritz for your involvement and your expertise and experience. I think that that helped with the strategic plan. I'm excited about where it's headed because this is the first time I've really felt it, that we have a plan. We've identified our goals. We know that we can quantify our numbers with the employees. I want to thank Kathy Bless. I think she's done an excellent job, and she's our permanent benefits manager, so that's great. And, of course, Nicole Guilfoy, who's done the Train the Trainer program. I myself have learned how to lead the stretching. We do that a couple times a week, and we're expanding that and increasing participation. But, of course, we need to do more, and that's what I just hope, you know, as we move into the future and more money is available, that we can put it towards wellness. The organizational structure, I'm on the LMBC, the Labor Management Benefits Committee also, and it used to get bogged down. I feel the LMBC was bogged down by my wellness issues. Well, not just mine, but I was a problem.
No, and, you weren't.
Yes, I was. Oh, just a little bit sometimes. But anyway, yeah, I feel that it's more streamlined. And again, I see that it's becoming more realistic to the employees. We do have a lot more work to do, but we are increasing participation, and I am committed to wellness. I think that the Water Bureau's commitment to wellness is evident, and I just see people doing a lot more, eating a lot more apples. You know, there's things you notice.
Be my banana here.
Hence the banana. A couple of the committee members just wanted me to mention that you know, what we've done the last couple of years is that we've had the wellness screenings, and the participation has, you know, increased from before. We have the monthly bureau talks. We have fitness classes. And look forward to some bureau time or city time for working out. And the overall, like I was just saying, we have increased the culture of wellness. The challenge is just getting people away from their desk to walk around or go to work out. You know, the gyms are closed, especially downtown. We're working on the gyms in the outlying areas. What would the barriers getting them moving and real modeling? You know, if we see our supervisors and directors eating their lunch at their desk, making the lunchtime meetings, planning meetings throughout the day where you really can't take a break, that's not the real modeling that we're looking for. So I think that would help.
Wait a minute. What was that all about?
Some people will take their break.
I didn't give her that line either.
It's not just.
And you're not supposed to eat lunch at your desk.
Well, and also particularly scheduling long meetings that go over lunchtime, which mean that people can't take a break.
You mean you can't schedule meetings over lunch?
That's just what we see. And so real modeling would be, yeah, okay.
I'm taking you seriously.
Oh, thank you.
Sue knows that that would
never happen, right?
Never, ever. So I think, so thank you all for listening, and I'm really excited about the wellness effort, and I see it working, and I'll help any way I can to get the employees motivated. Thank you.
You know, let me step out a little further. It's not about facilities, in my opinion, in our various buildings. I mean, there are those exercise facilities. It is about raising the awareness level and making sure, yep, and making sure that everybody understands not only what's available, but the benefits derived. And we're not just talking about managing cost. We're talking about helping people with their own personal health. But there are some issues around how, and it's not about money. To me, you cannot pay people enough money to do something that they should be doing for their personal health. So I don't want to put it in that context, but we can do more to elevate the thinking around this topic and to get people to understand how it benefits them.
Thank you.
Thank you both. Thank you all very much for your good work and your testimony. Carla, has anyone signed up?
No one else signed up.
Shall we, is this a resolution? What is
yes.
This? So moved.
Second.
It's been moved and seconded to accept this report. Carla, would you please call the roll?
Fish.
Thank you for an outstanding report and presentation. Commissioner Fritz, thank you for elevating the profile of this issue. At Parks and Housing, we accept your challenge. And we also look forward to integrating principles of wellness into everything that we do. So we appreciate it very much. Aye.
Saltzman.
Well, thank you for this report, Commissioner Fritz and Kathy and others. And we will take this to heart in our bureaus as well. Aye.
Leonard.
And thank you, Commissioner Fritz, for this good work. I appreciate what everybody's done. Aye.
Fritz.
Well, thank you to the committee and the benefits office for all your hard work. Dawn Hottenroth from BES is here also, and other committee members from ONI and all over the city people come, and BOEC people come to our committee meeting and participate. And we recognize we are a 24/7, 365 city. And we also have employees who have families and who also participate in the benefits plan. So this provides programs and facilities because it's cost effective to the taxpayers to maintain health and wellness in our employees. It, of course, also helps our employees remain healthy and provide the good services to the city that they do. Emphasizing again that the participation in the activities is all done on the employee's own time. So I do invite everybody to participate in the NAMI Walk, which is on May 23rd. Details of how to sign up will be on my website, and I will be asking each of my colleagues on the council to let me know by May 1st which of the other activities or a different one that they will be encouraging employees to participate in over the course of the year. We initially thought about doing it as a competition to see which commissioner could get there to get employees to participate in the one activity, but then one activity doesn't make for wellness. It has to be an ongoing commitment. And so that's why we are asking for employees and families and commissioners to try to participate in more than one activity. And again, to set a personal wellness goal so that even if it's a little something, to do a little something to be more healthy and happy and more productive in the city. So thank you again to all the committee members who are here and to my colleagues for supporting this. Aye.
Adams.
Well, I want to thank Commissioner Fritz for her leadership in this area. Giving her this assignment, I had high hopes, and she has definitely exceeded them. Perhaps the fact that she has some professional training in this area helps, but we're certainly taking good advantage of it. I'd like to also thank everyone who's been on the team helping to put it together, and I will see you at the Providence Bridge pedal. Everyone on the team that put it together, and Commissioner Saltzman is going to be riding with me all the bridges. So.
A tandem?
No, not a tandem. Those are odd. Aye. Good work.
Sorry.
So approved. Can you please read the title for time certain? Item number 353.
535.
What did I say? Yes.
Authorized intergovernmental agreement with the Park Grove School District related to sport field improvements.
Commissioner Fritz.
Thank you again, Mayor Adams. And I'd like to invite Dr. Karen Fisher-Gray from the Park Grove School District, the superintendent of the Park Grove School District, to come up. According to the Coalition for Livable Futures Regional Equity Atlas, the Park Grove neighborhood is parks deficient in compared with other areas of the city and is in need of greater access to parks and recreational areas. The City of Portland and Park Grove School District recognize that providing access to suitable sports fields for East Portland residents is a valuable component of overall neighborhood livability, which is why this past year the city did a special appropriation in this year's approved budget to assist the school in providing a usable recreational facility for the school and the neighborhood. And I thank Mayor Adams and the entire council for supporting that appropriation in the 2009-10 budget. This funding will be used to improve Parkhurst High School soccer fields. For members of this diverse neighborhood, high school soccer and recreational soccer leagues are a great way to build community. Note that the Youth Bill of Rights states that extracurricular activities and facilities to support activities such as athletics should be available to all students in an effort to promote health and wellness for youth. So it's continuing along a theme here from the previous item. Park Grove School District and the City of Portland are doing their part in making the benefits of recreation a bigger and better part of this community. Dr. Gray?
Well, good morning. As Commissioner Fritz said, I'm Karen Gray, and I'm Superintendent of Schools for Park Grove School District. And thank you very much, Mayor Adams and council members, for having me here today. I've never done this before, so I don't exactly know what it is you'd like me to talk about. I have a short presentation regarding this work, but I'm not sure that that's what you'd want me to share on. Is that okay?
You can share whatever you'd like. I was hoping you'd talk about how wonderful the Park Grove School District is.
Well, there you go.
That
is a dangerous subject because I could talk forever about that. Well, let me speak specifically to this work. We know how important it is for our kids in our school district to be connected to outside activities that bring them to school. There are a lot of threats right now because of our budgets to the kinds of elective and extracurricular activities and programs that keep our kids in school. The hook is not, I hate to say it, English and math. That isn't the hook for most kids. When I first came to Park Grove School District in 2007, we had a severe lack of pride, and we had a severe lack of spirit around being a Park Grove Bronco. And over the last 3 years, we have worked diligently to resurrect our athletic programs, and you can see that by the fact that we probably replaced 50% of our coaches and won dance for state again and water polo for state. I mean, for a small school district our size, that is fantastic. Our football team hadn't won a game in about 10 years, hadn't won a homecoming game in 15 years. And in the last 3 years, our football team's won half of their games, including homecoming. So there are real things happening in our district. Well, one of the things we are bereft of in East Portland is parks. And the other thing is soccer fields. And soccer is hot stuff out in East County. Only we don't have anywhere for people to play. So years ago, the Park Rose School District wanted to build soccer fields on the area I call the Bird Sanctuary. It's this gigantic space of land on our East Campus. And all that's there is birds. So I'd like to boot off.